Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. On television, Maggie Siff has made a name for herself playing self-possessed women operating in traditionally male-dominated worlds. She had a recurring role in Mad Men as Rachel Menken and starred in Sons of Anarchy as Tara Knowles. And currently, she is staring down hedge fund bros and her morally elastic husband as Wendy Rhodes on Showtime's Billions. So that's the TV life. On stage, Siff is tackling Sam Shepard's Curse of the Starving Class. The revival at the Signature Center Theater is a dark comedy about a troubled family struggling to tend to their farm, to stay fed, and to live with each other. Siff plays Ella, the mother who dreams of freedom for herself from the curse that she believes has doomed her family to unending intergenerational cycles of hardship and misery. The play runs through June 2nd at the Signature Theater, and I will just say, get there on time. You don't want to miss the first 25 seconds of this play.
That is true.
That is all I'm going to say. Maggie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you've got this great theater background. You played Kate in Taming of the Shrew, which I can completely see. And you've done Ibsen and Mamet. What's it been like to tackle Sam Shepard?
It feels like sort of in the lineage of all those other great writers that you talked about. He's a real wordsmith. He was really ahead of his time. You know, I think one of the things that was exciting about this play when I read it was how, like, raw and timely it felt in terms of thinking about the question of, is our country morally bankrupt? For Sam Shepard, it sort of feels like the disintegration of this family is reflective of, like, the disintegration of this country and sort of these vicious factions at war with each other. So he feels very timely in the way that sort of great timeless writers feel often when you bring them up again and re-examine them. He fits right in. So it's really exciting to, like, revisit this old but seminal work of his. But it's an early work that doesn't get produced a lot for, I think, a couple of different reasons. So it's been really interesting.
What is it about his use of language, the way he organizes words and thoughts, mm-hmm. that's challenging for an actor?
I mean, for some of the characters in our play, there's just a lot of it. Stylistically, sometimes in his plays, and in this play in particular, you often go in and out of being inside your own head and speaking sort of thoughts that are almost like to yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you flip very quickly to being in the middle of a very fierce confrontation with somebody you love. It requires a lot of verbal agility. And he's also just a master of turns of phrase and insults and, very long, poetic, dreamlike speeches. And, you're just jumping around in all these different modes.
When we first see Ella, when we first see you on stage, you got the whole face mask going and the house coat and the yes. hair and sort of rag curlers. What is going on with Ella when we meet her?
Yes. Yeah, so, the way we conceived of the beginning of this version of this play is The Night Before has really been this great fracturing of the family, and it's reflected in the very, very beginning of our play and what happens, which I don't want to give away, but don't miss the first minute of our show. It's sort of like, I think of Sam Shepard as sort of being in the tradition of Beckett in a way. There's that Beckett play Endgame where you're like, is this the last day of their lives or does every day start this way? And I think that can be applied to this play as well. You're like, have they been there before or is this the last day of their lives or does every day start this way? It feels simultaneously apocalyptic. And also, mm-hmm. like, this is where this family lives, which is just at the brink of apocalypse. And so that's kind of where the play begins. You know, they're in the kitchen, they're making breakfast, but they're picking up the remains of what was a really apocalyptic and catastrophic night, which involved a husband who's profoundly addicted to alcohol, who broke down the door, who left in a rage, who is he ever coming back? They don't know. And, you know, she and her son start the play just trying to sort of start the day.
She and her daughter particularly have Ella, and the daughter's name is Emma, and the father is Weston and Wesley, so there's lots of mirroring going on. Ella wants to leave. She wants to escape. She's hatched this plan. Emma wants to leave as well. And I think Emma seems like the one who's actually the most equipped to possibly leave. Yet she's the one that other family members thwart initially. Is this family, are they trying to help each other? Or are they all just existing in their own little silos, just trying to get through the day? To your point about, is this the last day?
Our director, Terry Kinney, talked a lot about how he feels this play is about a house where what's going on is what he calls a sibling society, where everybody's in it for themselves, that they're so depleted and they're so so up to their necks in their own deprivation that they can't really help each other. There are gestures toward it. They're rare. They're few and far between. But they're really out for themselves in a way, which is, you know, somebody playing a mother, I found that I was always looking for the places where I could try to bring my children with me or, you know, but in particular, she and her daughter, the two women in the family are so, I think they're so probably alike fundamentally. Emma is probably like a real version of who Ella was as a young woman. And they're at that place in their relationship between a teenage daughter and a mother where they're just at total loggerheads and they don't know how to connect with each other. And I think this mother does not know how to help her, and she does not know how to bring her along with her because the daughter is in such a so deep in her rebellious mode, all she wants to do is get away from her mother. And the mother is trying to get out, but she can't seem to get out and take her children with her, although she makes some effort to do that. But at the end of the day, they're all really fighting for survival.
My guest is Maggie Siff. We're talking about the play Curse of the Starving Class. Maggie's appearing in it at the Pershing Square Signature Center. It's playing through June 2nd. It's interesting, excuse me, when you reappear after Ella puts herself together, you know, you look fairly elegant. You look put together like she's had a life before this. That's what I thought when I saw you come out. I was like, oh, okay, because it could have been the way the actress, the part could have been played. It could have been somebody whose lipstick was sleight of off or dress wasn't quite right. But you look quite put together. Do you have a backstory for Ella? Did she have another life and has descended to this point?
I mean, we made some choices about that. You know, there's a line later in the play where her husband says to her, "Well, you're not like me. You come from gentle people. You come from artists." And she says, "My grandfather was a pharmacist." So there is the sense that she has a slightly different background. We did imagine that she comes from probably a pretty well-to-do middle class to upper middle class Midwestern family. You know, they met when he was in the army, a young, dashing man in the army, and they traveled the world. He talks about, you know, they went from army base through the world. And I think more than her coming from a refined background, she comes from a background where she had aspirations for refinement and where that was in the realm of possibility at the very least. And now she is in a place where those dreams seem silly. But from where she comes from, I think those dreams were real. And she knows how to touch them and to taste them and how to dress. And, you know, she has held on to that. And this is the day where she's going to make things work for herself. So she puts her best foot forward.
We've had a lot of actors in the show who are in revivals. Annette Bening was here yesterday from All My Sons, and we had the folks from Kiss Me, Kate. And we've had these interesting discussions about these plays, how they play in 2019 when they've been written so long ago. So this one was 78, I think.
Yes.
When you were working with your director and your fellow actors, Was there anything you felt needed to be handled differently or needed to be, now manipulated is too hard a word, mm-hmm. but changed because it's 2019?
You know, we talked, initially we talked about changing a couple of references. We didn't want to contemporize it, nor did we want it to feel like it was living in 1978. We wanted it to live in a place that felt like it could be now, it could be then, it could be, and I think the play can do that. I think it does do that. We tried to change a couple of references to sort of get it away from, he makes a lot, the husband makes a lot of mention of the war, and it's pretty clear in the play that it's World War II, and we were like, is there a way that it can be any war? You know, is there a way? And we ended up not changing those lines, partly, mm-hmm. well, the estate really wouldn't let us. But it actually really doesn't matter, because every war is any war. Mm-hmm. And the play, I think, still has that quality of, you know, it could be now, it could be then. And it floats in a sort of netherworld, you know, that I think allows it to slip into this time right now. And certainly the conversation in the play about the country and the state of our country and the individual versus the corporation and, you know, how do you stake out a place in the country for a family to grow and to thrive and to prosper when it feels like the odds are stacked against you because of corporate greed and, you know, there are all these themes in the play that resonate very, very directly and powerfully with, I think, what a lot of people feel right now.
It's been the case with almost every one of these revivals,
yeah.
that we've been talking about, All My Sons. That, mm-hmm. you know, the theme of that play is that Joseph Keller, he lets airplane parts
right.
be manufactured, which are faulty.
Right. right.
What's Timely. On the front page of the New York Times yes. right now, yes. right? My guest is Maggie Siff. We're talking about the play, The Curse of the Starving Class. It's at Pershing Square Signature Center. The title, Ella thinks her family is cursed. What is this curse? Would you mind describing it?
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, she's talking about a addiction is certainly part of it. There's a lot of conversation about how there's nitroglycerin in the blood of the men in this family. And that's a very male curse. The daughter talks about not having the curse, that particular curse. Mm-hmm. But then there's this moment where Ella says it's a curse. And the way she describes it is there are these things that we pass down from generation to generation. And even if it starts with the man, the woman carries it forward in her womb. And we're all complicit in it and we're mm-hmm. all caught in it. I think that when one family member is cursed, an entire family is caught in the web of whatever that is. And that's certainly true for this family.
You are on stage with a live lamb.
Yes.
There's a live animal for a lot of time on stage.
Indeed.
What's that been like? Have you done that before?
No, I haven't.
First for everything.
I believe there's a saying that you should never try to share a stage with animals or children because they'll upstage you every time. But that's what's really amazing about it, actually, is that there's this live creature, Element, who, you know, she's marching to the beat of her own drummer. Her yes. name's Annie. She's incredibly sweet. We love her dearly. She's more than doubled in size since we started rehearsing this play. So she is growing by leaps and bounds. And, yeah, she surprises us every night. She's very docile. She's quiet most of the time. When she does decide to speak or make a sudden movement, it's always on cue. It's always perfect. it always enlivens everything that's happening. And, you know, the unpredictable nature of that is it's quite delightful.
I'm sure it keeps you on your toes.
It does.
It must. The other thing I thought about was watching the play is you're on stage for a really long time. Is it that the first two acts are mm-hmm. put together mm-hmm. and you're on stage in this kitchen, in this one set? What is it like to just have to be in that mm-hmm. same space for that extended period of time with this very intense situation mm-hmm. in this family?
I mean, it's just, I mean, it's like being shot out of a cannon. I have beautiful scene partners, Gillis Geary and Lizzie DeClement, and those first really extended scenes in the play, mm-hmm. Who play my children. It's very enjoyable to share space as a family and to sort of literally tear it apart. It requires a lot of energy, and there's a big, our first act is quite long. It's an hour and a half, so we all sort of have to endure and take the audience all the way through to that. But I think there's a great payoff in that kind of sustained action and attention that's required, and where the act finally leaves you.
Can I ask you a couple questions about Billions?
Of course.
I have like a whole Billions routine in my house.
Of course.
I record it, I sit down, glass of wine, I watch it. The idea of your character, Wendy, who is this performance coach in this hedge fund, and she really is kind of a force, mm-hmm. sort of this quiet but powerful force in this world of crazy and greed and all kinds of male energy. But she's had an interesting evolution from the beginning to this season, and you were picked up for mm-hmm. another season. And we've seen a more vulnerable version of her. We've mm-hmm. seen her vulnerable side, I should mm-hmm. say, this season. What have you enjoyed about Wendy's arc?
I have enjoyed seeing her become a little bit less controlled, the dismantling of her armor a little bit. I think the trap of that character is for her to just be a superhero. And we have talked a lot about, me and the writers, about sort of what would happen if Wendy really loses her moral center, which makes a great deal of sense when you've chosen to live your life in the center of these hubs of power, and the sort of corruption that ensues from the acquisition of all that power and the desire for all that power. And she's, her life partners are these two men who are obsessed with it. And so very naturally, in particular this season, she becomes somewhat infected by it and undone by it. And I've really enjoyed that evolution. I mean, on one level, it's always a little bit sad when your characters become less perfect on a sort of human level, mm-hmm. but on an actor level, it only gets more interesting, to give her those added dimensions. And then she, in this sort of second half of the season, she's really sort of reckoning with her conscience, which is also really fun to explore.
Before I let you go, did you go to Bronx Science?
I did go to Bronx
Science. Were you a math science person who ended up in theater? I mean, this has been fascinating to me. I was like, I have to ask her this.
I was just fine at math science. I was more like a theater person who ended up at Bronx Science because I got in, and my parents were like, you're going to Bronx Science. And I was like, okay. I'd always done well in math and science, and I enjoyed it. I actually genuinely enjoyed it. And then I would travel to this all-boys Catholic high school in the city to do plays. And I got my theater fix elsewhere, yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I wondered, where did the theater come in? Because everybody I think about at Bronx Science, all my friends who've gone are super math, awesome math nerds.
I really everybody's like, oh my God, you must be brilliant at math and science. And I'm like, I'm totally average. And having gone to Bronx Science taught me that I am totally average in those realms. But I did enjoy it.
Part of that sentence is, in those realms, average in Bronx Science, pretty good every place else. Maggie Sith, it was lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you, too.
Maggie is in Curse of the Starving Class at the Pershing Square Signature Theater through June 2nd. And Billions is on Showtime. This is all of it on WNYC.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.